Welcome to yet another in our series of political perspectives on WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan, and it is so good to have you at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the email machine, the Twitter account, and the many ways we have to communicate with each other. Our telephone number, 850-414-1234, where you can always be part of the conversation. If you have a landline phone, and I understand some people are now reconsidering their decision to abandon that technology in the wake of Hurricane Michael, since a lot of those circuits stayed up, even as we're having some cellular difficulty in some other parts here of the panhandle. We have a toll-free number for you folks, 800-926-8809. You can send us an email to perspectives@wfsu.org. Well, there are three Tallahassee City Commission seats that are up for grabs this particular electoral cycle, because you have two members of the commission who said that's it, they don't want to go for another term, and you have yet another member of the commission who decided that they would like to be governor of Florida. So you put all that together and you have a wholesale change. Three of the five positions now going to be transitioning in the course of this cycle. And we've already talked to the folks who are running for seat four, the mayor's seat, back on Monday. You've also got seat three, which we addressed yesterday, and now we have seat five, and there are two contenders there, one of whom is with us now, and the other one that we hope arrives shortly. This is Bob Lotain, and we have talked to you in the primary situation, Bob, and if you could just give a little bit of a background on you, and again, what you, to your way of thinking, would bring to that position of Tallahassee City Commission seat five.
Well, I think we bring a couple of things. Ideas and proposals are one of the things. We 2 weeks ago put out a policy proposal with a variety of ideas in it, and these are things we went into the campaign with a normal proposal, you know, on the big things, economy, environment, and things like that. The thing that we put out a couple of weeks ago, and this is all on our website at boblotain.com, are really in response to what we heard on the campaign trail over roughly the last year, talking with hundreds, if not thousands, of people, stakeholders, knocking on doors, whatever. These were the kinds of things that we heard again and again and again, or maybe from key stakeholders, people who really had a perspective on things. These are some ideas that that really answer those things, and that could and we think could be probably implemented fairly easily, fairly quickly, and I think they would make a difference. We call it the preserve and advance proposal. We are a 21st century city. We're a university town. We're a capital government town. We're also trying to attract technology jobs that you can raise a family on with the Mag Lab and all the cutting edge research that FSU is doing. That's the advanced part of it. But we also have a great city with history, with amazing trees, amazing architecture, and we want to preserve that also. So we call it the preserve and advance proposal. So we are about ideas. I think the other important thing that anybody who is asking for votes for in a community position such as this, I think you have to have shown some commitment to the community since you're asking people to vote for you to really make the ultimate commitment and serve in one of these positions. And I think I bring that to the table. I have a long history of working with many local charities, primarily the Red Cross, and that's certainly apropos now with what we're seeing going on with Hurricane Michael. But I've spent years with the Red Cross putting together fundraising initiatives, running large events, and just trying to get money there. Because when these things happen, the Red Cross can't ask for money then. We have to have funding in advance. And I've been doing the hard work of trying to keep that funding going year after year after year for the past 12 years. And not only the Red Cross, I've worked in the March of Dimes, Tallahassee Boys Choir, a lot of local charities trying to get money because that's what keeps them going.
Well, you talk about Red Cross, and that is a real nice point of departure to maybe revisit what has happened as far as the disaster recovery here post-Michael. Now, that seems incredible, but it's 1 week ago that the storm was finally starting to make its departure from our area, and certainly did a number on the counties to the west of us, but did some considerable damage here in Tallahassee. And since you as a city commissioner, if you get the nod for that, would also be in a position to determine some policy when it comes to the city utility, I can ask you how do you think they did, and do you have any ideas on maybe the next time we would have a situation like this, how we might be able to respond better?
They seem like they've learned from when you look at the response on Hermine, there were some complaints. There were some, there was some debate over how well the response was. The good news, and this goes back over the winter. The city learned from that, and they put in new procedures. They did things differently to where there was a lot of debate about out-of-town power crews coming in and not being able to go and actually do some work, and they were held back and this and that. And they identified the reasons for that, and a lot of it was, if you light up the main thoroughfares, Thomasville Road, Monroe Street, et cetera, and then do the neighborhoods. Well, they've turned that around, and now because it was a dangerous situation, people could get killed if you didn't know what they're doing. So they have made a lot of changes, and I think they've borne some fruit. I mean, this response seems pretty good. I mean, this was as bad, if not worse, than the damage we saw in Hermine. It seems like they're getting things together pretty quickly. I read today they're down to 1,000 people. That's pretty quick. That's pretty good. Now, west of us, it's a whole different story. Those people are still in a world of hurt. I have relatives out that way, but I think as far as Tallahassee, with what we faced, I think we've done a pretty good job.
One of the things that you might be in line to consider as a city commissioner will be a push to underground more of the network to make it more resilient. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that debate has come up. Back when I was the spokesman at the Department of Insurance back in 2004, 2005, when we had – that was the first time we had seen multiple hurricanes, hitting the state in 1 year. And that debate came up then more in South Florida. Now seem like we're getting a hurricane a year, and this is maybe the new normal. Unfortunately, in the research that I've done on that, the expense is the biggest deal. It's roughly 10 times what it costs to, string lines to put them underground. So there is a cost to that. What Tallahassee is doing is they're strategically doing that now. They are in areas where it's easy to do. They're burying the lines. But there's a lot of areas, with the oak trees and the roots and construction already being there. There's areas that are not very conducive to it. And the other problem is when you bury, if all the lines are buried, I've been told if you develop a problem, it's buried. So to find the problem and to fix the problem can also be more expensive. So there is a cost benefit analysis, and it seems like they're strategically doing it where we can do it. I don't think we'll ever bury all of our lines, but it looks like we're doing what we can to address that issue.
Tallahassee City Commission seat 5, that was the one that Gil Ziffer has occupied for lo these many years. Gil is not seeking another term, and so it is up for contention in the upcoming November 6th general election. Of course, we're getting vote by mail is already underway. Early voting is going to be coming
Monday,
our way.
I believe.
Yes, it is. It kicks in at that point, Bob. And then we will see who takes that. And besides Bob Lotain, of course, Diane Williams Cox is also a finalist for this particular seat. And I talked to Diane here last week to make sure we were all locked in there. But I know how things have been just crazy following the storm. Mm-hmm. And so we hope to talk to her at some point. One thing also we will bring to your attention, Bob, is a Facebook comment from Mitchell, who says he has two questions. First one, from the years 1969 to 2018, 1,400 people have been arrested with marijuana-related offenses by the Leon County Sheriff. Would you, as city commissioner, work to dismiss convictions related to marijuana-related crimes in the city? And number two, homelessness, a sad reality for some. What would you do to work to help the homeless find homes and hold dignified work? Two questions for you.
Yeah, I referred before to the new proposal we put out, the preserve and advance proposal. And one of the things in there is for small amounts of marijuana. Granted, federally, it's still illegal. So kids are having their lives ruined over getting caught with small, a couple of joints, whatever it is, personal amounts of marijuana. We have, I think, 10 states now where it's legal to buy marijuana for personal use. And yet, a kid can have his life ruined here. That's ridiculous. So one of our proposals is that Tallahassee police, if they catch a kid with pot, take the pot, but no paperwork, no record, no ruining their lives over this. Obviously, if they're driving or, it's one of these Cheech and Chong situations, completely different situation. However, if you're just caught with it, I think it's time that we have just got it. We cannot be ruining kids' lives over this. Some kid, whether it's FSU or FAMU or, a lot of these kids on the South Side, they're having a tough enough time establishing, getting on the first steps in life. We don't need to be messing their lives up over something like this that's illegal in 10 other states. It's crazy.
Well, I'll tell you, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to homelessness, income disparity, economic development, job creation, that kind of thing. Why don't we hold on to that until the other side of the break? It's rapidly coming down on us. And that'll give me a chance to remind folks who are watching this program via Facebook Live or listening to it on the radio that this program is being telecast this evening at 7 Eastern Time on 4FSU. That's Comcast Channel 4 in Leon, Gadsden, McCullough, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties, at least insofar as there is a cable connection to a lot of those customers. We understand what the challenges are on that score, too, in the wake of the storm. We're also live streaming on our WFSU Media Facebook page, and we invite you to hang around offline after the live radio program goes off the air as we continue the discussion on Facebook for another couple, 3 minutes there. Our entire program, including the extended conversation, will be archived on WFSU.org/perspectives. We'll be back in a moment as we continue our conversation with City Commission candidate Bob Lotain, and we hope to be joined by Diane Williams-Cox at some point in this discussion as well, right here on Political Perspectives. On Political Perspectives, and during the break, through the wonders of modern telecommunications, we heard from the other candidate for Tallahassee City Commission, seat 5, Diane Williams-Cox. She is en route, got a little delayed at work here, but we'll continue our discussion with her opponent, Bob Lotain, for a few moments and then pose the same questions to her in the interest of fairness. Okay, that whole thing from Forbes magazine, Bob, we have heard about, it's what, more than a year and a half old, that Tallahassee, Florida has one of, if not the largest, degrees of gap between the highest and the lowest income folks in, if not the entire country, certainly the Southeast. And how do we deal with that, having folks way at the bottom and other folks way at the top? And
one thing, first of all, we have to look at what we have here. We have two great industries in universities or higher education and government being the capital of one of the largest states in the country. Those are two great things to have. But not everybody's into that. Not everybody's cut out for that. We were talking before about kids being ready to do construction jobs or things like that. But they are great things, and they support so many other businesses and so much other economic opportunity. So what we need to do is we need to attack it, I think, at two ends. A, we got to provide more opportunity, more jobs that you can raise a family on. We've gotten a lot of retail and restaurants over the years, and those are great jobs, you know, sometimes to accentuate yourself or for students. But if you want to raise a family, we don't have much outside of government and universities. So we've got to work on that end. And if we get those jobs here, we have to be able to prepare kids who aren't prepared for those jobs through internships, apprenticeships, formal training, whatever. A lot of people talk about the Maglab as being the linchpin for some of this, that the Maglab should be able to be used to attract companies that can avail themselves of that. And a lot of that is going on. The interesting thing, if you talk to Dr. Gary Ostrander, who's the head of research out at FSU, he will tell you the Maglab is great, and they're going to use that to bring in other industries. But they're doing so much other cutting-edge research there. They're working with the Navy on all kinds of substances that can be used on ships, and just wild stuff that should be able to attract a lot of businesses to that. What I always thought we should do, and he agreed with me, is we have the Office of Economic Vitality, staffed by bureaucrats, a couple of whom are retiring and all. But in the modern economy, to get these kind of companies, you really need to bring in a specialist, private sector specialist. You would think normally if I want, you know, to attract, you know, this company A here, I got to go to the head of company A. Not necessarily. There's somebody in that company that you need to get to, and they know these kind of people. They know who to get to. They know how to speak the language and all. In Dr. Ostrander's view, if we were to budget $1 million over 3 years for salary and travel, lots of travel to Ireland, Europe, and certainly the continental United States and some in Asia, that we could probably bring somebody in who could really get some businesses going here. Now, once they get here, where do we put them? Where do they go? We have 900 acres out by the airport of land that's not affecting anybody's neighborhood. And we've kind of banked that, and we look at that as if companies come here, they have access to an 8,000-foot runway, they have access to I-10, a major highway. Perfect. It's wonderful. But I think we need to make that shovel ready. We need to put in roads, utilities, permitting, have it done so that if a company shows interest in coming here, we can get them here quick, we can get them set up here quick, because business moves at the speed of sound nowadays. So I think between getting an active business recruiter on board here and having the economically developable land ready to go, I think we'll be able to bring in the jobs. And then when we know what's coming here, we have to start training people who are, you know, on the underside of life to try to get them ready so they can take advantage of some of these opportunities.
All righty. I see a familiar face coming in here. Diane Williams-Cox joins us.
Better late than never.
Sorry about that. You know, some of us have to work for a living.
Well, thank you, Diane. And what we wanted to do was, number one, to welcome you. You are the other contender here for Tallahassee City Commission seat 5. And in the interest of fairness, let's get you all caught up on everything here.
Right.
So, okay. A little introductory here, folks, for folks who don't know who you are, Diane, and a little bit of your background and what positions you for this job.
Okay. Thank you again, Tom, and I apologize to the both of you for being late and to the listening audience. Mm-hmm. I do have to work, and sometimes you have to do what you have to do in the nature of what we do. But I am Diane Williams-Cox, and I am a 30-year resident here in Tallahassee. Came here to college at Florida A&M University from Gadsden County, Quincy, Florida specifically, and got a degree in data processing technology and became a computer programmer and began, you know, my career and started my family. And my husband and I, we moved to Central Florida to work. But then we came back home. We came back here and began my career with state government. And as I heard you saying, That's one of the industries that we have here. And state government is a very good job, very good to us. But I've also worked in the private sector as well as the international markets. And I've held positions from being a computer programmer to being a manager. I currently work for an organization, a nonprofit called Voices for Florida. And my job there is with the Open Doors Outreach Network, where we help provide funding for direct services for children and young adults who've been sexually exploited or trafficked. And we have six regions throughout the state, including right here in the Big Bend area. So that's where I just raced over from. Thank God I didn't get a ticket. Thank you, TBD. I'm glad I didn't get stopped.
Well, we were happy you also didn't collide with one of the many bucket trucks that's going around the area.
Oh, right? Let me tell you, and the people who are watching what they're doing while they're driving, there was a traffic jam.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. A new survey just came out when it comes to distracted driving on the national level. And folks, it is scary, but more on that to come. Since we are in the aftermath here of the storm, though, Diane, if you could react to how you think the city did, and as a city commissioner, maybe some ideas that you would have for improving that whole storm handling and recovery process, if you get the nod.
Well, let me say, first of all, hats off to our mayor and the city commissioners and the city manager and all of their staff, the linemen, all of the electrical services, all the people who came together to make this happen. This storm hit, I lost power. Let's see, today is Wednesday. I think I lost power. It's a blur now, either Tuesday or Wednesday. We got power back 2 days ago. And there are those who still don't have power. Hang in there. It's happening. But I will tell you that I think that we learned some lessons from the last storm. And we were the city was ready. They were prepared. They already had mutual aid lined up to get in here and try to get things reconnected. Some of us had special issues because we had trees on lines. You know, I live in a neighborhood where we love our trees, and we had trees on our lines, and our trees love us. But, you know, 150 mile per hour wind coming at you, you can only stand for so long. And so we had some special issues that we had to take care of. I think the city's response was admirable. I think they did a really good job. Communication was much better this time, but there's always room for improvement on the communication side. I think that going to Facebook Live and going to working on Facebook and working through text messages and what have you, that really worked. Digitally had some challenges, I'm told, and I experienced some of those challenges. But the other thing is that we cannot rely on individuals having access to cell phones and cellular service and apps to get things done, because when they power down, you've got to have some other resource. So we just need to work together in our community to make sure that people are aware of other ways to communicate and to keep each other abreast that don't require using a cell phone, because even, you know, like in Gadsden County, cellular service, you couldn't get it. And even here in spotted places, you couldn't get it depending on your provider. Now, I never lost cellular service. Thank you to Verizon. We were able to keep, and we kept going to the truck to charge our phones up. Everybody can't afford a generator, so that's we can't assume that. So there's some areas where I'm hoping that we'll do some lessons learned afterwards, after everything's been restored, and we can look at some places where we can do some things better. And I'm sure that our city has a COOP plan, which is a continuity of operations. I'm sure we have that, and they operated using that. I'm hoping so, because what they did work.
Well, finally, to bring you up on a par here with Mr. Lotain, Diane, we had Mitchell, who gave us a little question here from Facebook, and we are on Facebook Live and also for FSU, Comcast Channel 4 right now.
Happy homecoming, FSU.
There you go. But this related it to two things. Number one, if you were interested in the city pursuing what so many other communities have done to essentially, if not decriminalize, because the city does not have that power, but at least to ramp back the enforcement of marijuana possession laws or restrictions in the community, and also what you do about the homeless and income disparity situation. Just a couple of minor issues.
Issues. Whereas far as the decriminalization of marijuana, I support what the commissioners, county commissioner, tried to do maybe a year or more ago now, is to roll, not, you know, for small amounts of marijuana, let's not create a criminal record for the individual. Let's do something, you know, a fine or what have you, and, you know, a citation that won't put them in the penal system for having a small amount of marijuana. I do believe that we will move towards legalizing so that, especially for medicinal purposes and maybe even more. But we're just not quite there yet. But I think that we will eventually get there. And my millennium friends, including my children, believe that it's from the earth and it's healthy. And who am I to say that it's not? We just need to make sure that it's used properly. And people don't abuse it and don't cause harm. Homelessness is really a big deal in our community. And I think we've added to that list after the storm. There are those who are now homeless at no fault of their own, and many are homeless at no fault of their own. But I think that we've got to be a compassionate community. We've got to figure out creative ways to help get people off the street. Everybody who's homeless, it doesn't mean that they do not have a home somewhere. Some of them are mentally ill or mentally challenged and don't remember where home is. And we need to just kind of get in there and work with them, get the medication that they may need or to help them become lucid again. Some of the folks that I know that I've encountered, they're very intelligent people. They're just down on their luck and don't know what to do. So we can't just have a broad brush about homelessness. Everybody who's homeless is not a criminal. We have people who become homeless as a result of Hurricane Michael. And those folks were doing what they thought they needed to do, but now they have no home. And so what do we do about them? We've got to help place people and help stand them up with livable wages and an opportunity to live this American dream like most of us. And if they need help, we need to give them the help.
And you mentioned wages, and some communities are going for $15 an hour minimum wage. Bob, what do you think?
I support raising the minimum wage. I think to jump to $15 an hour. I mean, in Florida now we're at $8.25. I think if we were to, it'd be almost doubling it. I think that might be a shock to the system. There are, as you know, the economy right now is doing well, and a lot of local businesses are doing well, but not all of them. I mean, there's a lot of them that are hanging on by a thread, and you could put them out of business. So I think I support raising the minimum wage. I think doubling it in one fell swoop would be a bit much, though.
Phase it in, Diane, or make the jump? What do you think?
I think that we need to move in that direction. I know the county commissioned and looked at doing $12 an hour. And I think that we need to start there and work our way up. I understand, as the chairman of the Capital City Chamber, I understand some of the needs of small businesses. But even there, we've got to make sure we have the economic development so that they can afford the wages. So we've got to do what we need to do to incentivize folks to raise the wages so that families can be home at night instead of having to work 3 and 4 jobs to help keep food on the table. I believe that is the issue with many of our schools that have been classified as failing. Parents are out there working, trying to make a living to keep the kids safe and warm and fed, and they don't have time to be home to help do the homework. So I think if we pay livable wages, people can be at home at night and work with their children to help those grades go up.
I heard that magic word, odor, crime, and that has become now a political hot potato, even on the gubernatorial race, the incredible crime rate in Tallahassee, although from what we're finding, it may be the way that we report crime that is a little bit more all-encompassing than some other communities. So you're comparing perhaps cherries and kumquats.
Right.
But do we need more resources in law enforcement, Bob, do you think?
Yeah, I think any objective analysis that if you look at how many cops we've had on duty and the growth in the community, we really haven't kept pace. We have added police over recent years, but we have not kept pace with the growth. So I think we need more police officers, and not just police officers. We got to get the right type. Cops nowadays, it's not just crime fighting. You've got to be a psychologist. You got to be a family counselor. The cops nowadays wear a lot of hats, and we have some great ones here. I was proud to get the PBA's endorsement. So we need to bring in more cops, but we got to have the right type. We you can have unintended consequences if you're not careful. So that's part of the problem. That's not the entire answer. I think there are smaller things we can do. We've talked in many forums about in some of the crime hotspot areas. Everybody knows where they are, or people know where they are. A lot of those areas need to be lit better. Sidewalks need to be better. We just need to improve the general makeup of the areas, and a lot of that would help out too. But definitely we need more cops.
Okay, Diane, your approach there.
Well, I'm a data person, and I would rely on the data, reliable data, to determine whether more police officers are needed, additional techniques are needed, whether we look at people who are committing crimes, or if there are mental illnesses that are at play here, so that we can determine if it's mental illness, don't take them to jail. Let's get them the help that they need. If it's a crime, then we do what we need to do to fix that issue. I just really think that I don't like telling people what they need. I like people telling me what they need. And if the police department believes that, and city commission believe that we need more police officers, they will support that with why we need more police officers. And I would rely on that. And as far as how the crime rate is reported, again, I'm a data person, but I understand how data can be used and how it can be abused. So I would be interested in seeing how crimes are reported and see how that data is collected and how you compare how others in the area are collecting it. And so we make sure we're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges, and not just some subjective way of drawing conclusions. But according at the last City Commission meeting, there's a City Commission meeting today. Last City Commission meeting, Chief DeLeo reported that our crime rate was going down, and he gave a very good report. And Chief DeLeo is a friend, and so I'm inclined to believe what he says. But he too, I'm sure, will understand that I would want data.
The two contenders for Tallahassee City Commission seat 5, Diane Williams Cox, who you just heard from, Bob Lotain, he's also here, and this is Political Perspectives on WFSU. We have some calls coming in, and you can join that queue as well. 850-414-1234 is the number to call. You can also send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, and we'll be right back. The City of Tallahassee City Commission, seat 5, the one that Gil Ziffer has been in for so long. Gil's decided he's not going to retire, but he has, what do we call it, other opportunities, other things he wants to do. And so that seat's going to be open. Also, the one now occupied by the mayor. I understand he's running for governor or something. I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So he's not going to be around anymore. We have two folks who are running there. We heard from them on Monday. Yesterday it was the folks for seat 3 that Nancy Miller has been in for a while. And they talked, and now we have the Tallahassee City Commission seat 5. And that is Bob Lotain and Diane Williams Cox. And Charles joins us here on Line 1 on Political Perspectives. Hi, Charles. Thanks for calling. Yes, Charles, go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, you were talking about raising the minimum wage, which sounds like a good idea. But if you raise it, let's say, to $12 an hour, how is that going to impact state employees? And since the state's our major employer, and I'm sure there are lots of those people not making $12 an hour.
No, that's a wonderful question. Let's start with Bob Lotain. How do you do that, Bob?
I'm certainly sure there are state employees not making that. The state would, first of all, the legislature is the one who's going to have to pass any increase in the minimum wage. They do have the power. So if they pass it, they're going to have to abide by it, which means state workers, in some cases, would make more money. Generally, when you raise the minimum wage anyways, it's always going to put upward pressure. So even if you're making more than the minimum wage, it's going to put upward pressure on all wages. That's just the way economics work. So the state would end up paying more, just like private sector businesses would also.
Okay, and would you do the same thing there, Diane? Can the city compel the state to change its pay scale, essentially?
As a 19-year veteran of state employment and also being in the ranks of not receiving a pay raise for the past 8-9 years, I fully understand that's a great question. I do believe that if the minimum, whenever the minimum wage is raised in the state, all wages would have to go up to meet those. And so those employees who are not making $12 an hour will also, I believe, be eligible for that. And of course, you know, it, like Bob said, it will be on the Florida legislature. And if your legislator doesn't support that, then we know what we need to do in a couple of years to take care of them. But I do believe that if the if this is passed, state employees will also be will come up to that level, those who are not already there.
Well, while we're talking here, because of the what has gone on the past couple of years, there have been, should we say, sometimes not altogether pleasant relationships between local governments and the state government here in Florida, as the legislature more and more tries to take over some of the decisions that are usually made by cities and counties and saying, no, you guys can't do that, whether it's plastic bags or gun control or any of these sorts of things. As the capital city, how do you maybe change or influence that dynamic if you get onto the city commission?
Well, having, again, a former state employee, having been very active and involved in our government at the city and the county level, this is not my first rodeo in getting involved. I've seen where things actually work, but I've also seen where they don't work. And I think the crux of it all is listening to what the residents want. Many times we go to them to be elected, but we don't return to find out, are we doing a good job? What is it that you need us to do? We should not have to hire a lobbyist to reach out to our city officials. Just as we're doing one-on-one conversations now, that's what we need to be doing. And I want to be that kind of commissioner where people feel comfortable talking to me because I can understand what their situation is, or they can help me to understand what the situation is. So then when I go into deliberations or go into the meeting chamber, I'm able to say, this is what I learned. This is what someone brought to my attention. This is what I researched. Because as I said, I'm a data person, but I believe in the common touch, and I believe in people being able to reach their government, have access to their government, and the people who they elect.
But you would have no problem just going over from City Hall just another block to the president of the Senate or the Speaker of the Florida House and saying, what are you guys doing to us?
No problem at all.
Okay, Bob Lutain.
I think being the capital city and having City Hall right across from the legislature, you have to use that bully pulpit, whether it be the county commission, the city commission, or and joining forces. And they do some of that now. Gil's been very active in doing that. He's been very active with the Florida League of Cities. We have the Florida Association of Counties. So, you know, we have our own lobbyists. We can act as, you know, we can go over there and lobby ourselves. Anybody can lobby. But we certainly have these state organizations that are there to fight for the interests of the cities and towns. I find it so interesting that the legislature is overwhelmingly Republican, and Republicans are the ones who are constantly saying government governs best when it governs closest to the people and on a local level. And most of these guys start out as city commissioners or county commissioners or whatever. Suddenly they get up into the state legislature and all of a sudden, no, we want the power up here. We want to take it from the local. All that stuff we said before, just ignore that. We want to take the power. So there is a huge power struggle, and we have to be active, being the capital city, being right next door. We have to get over there and fight for our interests.
850-414-1234. Let's get Liz on. She's been waiting very patiently there on line two. And thank you for that, Liz. We appreciate it. Welcome to Perspectives. Yeah, hi, Liz. Go ahead.
Yes, I actually wanted to comment on 2 points you've already touched on. First, on the minimum wage, real quick. I think Tallahassee has got to get in the groove with that, because I know people personally that are leaving because they can't make a decent living here. And not to, you know, just anecdotally, I was in a Publix last week and overheard a Publix employee sharing with her manager that, you know, she couldn't survive on what she was making there. I mean, we all love Publix, you know, but people can't survive on what the minimum wage is here. And the fact that it's still, I don't know, $8.25 or $8.35 or whatever it is right now, I mean, that's, we can't operate from that place, because that's the place of poverty. And no one can survive on that, especially someone with a family. And on one other note, y'all haven't touched on this yet, but this is why I'll be, one reason I'll be voting for Andrew Gillum, is I'm a substitute teacher, and it constantly, with the issue of the minimum wage being raised, I'm constantly reminded that I am paid as a substitute teacher, having a college degree, having taught full-time as a teacher in the past. I'm paid the same as some people without a college degree are paid at the minimum wage rate in other areas of the country. And I just find that incredulous. I mean, I find myself asking, why am I doing this and why am I here? And then I'm going to jump away from that and go to crime. I grew up in Tallahassee. Is it different than it used to be within the city of Tallahassee? Yes. I mean, we've got a crime, you know, it's a certain kind of crime issue, I think, you know. I mean, a particular kind of crime issue. But it's certainly nothing like Central Florida, where I lived for 20 years and learned to lock my doors 24/7. You do have to be security conscious. And, I mean, I want the city and the local governments to be, you know, proactive. And I know we all need to be involved as part of the solution. But, you know, it's not, I don't feel unsafe walking into any neighborhood in Tallahassee or into any area of Tallahassee, whereas when I lived in Central Florida, I knew any area that I was in, you know, criminally speaking, you were fair game. Here, I think it's a little more, it's probably based more on poverty and opportunity, crimes of opportunity, and maybe gang-related stuff. I'm not a data person, so I can't speak, you know, specifically to all that. But I just think to kind of focus so much on our horrible crime rate doesn't accurately really represent the true nature of Tallahassee in past and present. And that's all I have to say.
Oh, thank you so much, Liz. A lot of good points there. And, gee, let's kind of – is there – maybe a unifying factor to what she was saying, as far as there is a lack of opportunity for young people, particularly young people in certain parts of this community, and that may be kind of at the heart of all of this.
Yeah, she brought up two issues separately that I think there is a strong link, causal link between, and that is lack of opportunity or you know, bad wages and crime. They're not mutually exclusive. People that get involved in crime, it generally is not your first option. It's if you can't feed yourself, you can't feed your family, you're more likely to, if you have a chance to maybe get something that has to be done through crime, that's when it's going to happen. So I think these things are linked. Our poverty rate, the lower wage jobs that people are, Diane talks about 3 and 4 jobs. You know, I think that's related somewhat to our crime rate, and we can't look at them separately. We have to look at them as a package, and we have to bring more opportunity. And this is, you know, it's a Tallahassee problem, but in Florida, we have a governor who's running around bragging about all these jobs he's created, but they're not great jobs, okay? You know, as long as the present leadership in the state believes that taxes rule everything, the only thing that you do is if you keep taxes low, everything will take care of itself. That's not true. But if you talk with good businesses that pay good wages and provide jobs you can raise a family on, they are more interested in the education system than they are in tax rates. Okay, you go to Massachusetts and California, places like that, the jobs, they're paid far higher than in Florida, but the tax rates there are much higher, but the education systems are much better. So we've got to look at these things more holistically.
Okay, and as a city, what do you do, Diane? How do you change that dynamic?
Well, as a city commissioner, the first thing that I want to do is look, take a historical perspective of where we've come from, where we are, and where do we want to go. We've got to have a vision for Tallahassee. We can't react to everything that happens. We've got to have a vision and have a plan. And I absolutely agree with her. We're educating the world here in Tallahassee at Florida State University, at Florida A&M, and at TCC, but then they can't find jobs to stay here. Once upon a time, the place to work was state government because the state government paid well. That's why I moved back from the private sector and moved back here. But with the past few administrations, their job was to empty state buildings. And so what they've done is cut those good government jobs that help make things operate properly here in Florida. And so people have had to try to do other things, and they've cut wages. So what we've had to do was to try to find a way to survive. And she is correct. It is unfortunate that a teacher, a highly qualified teacher, has to earn a minimum wage as a substitute teacher. And it does cause teachers to ask, why am I doing this? And when teachers start asking those kinds of questions, then children are not being taught by the most qualified and highly educated teachers. They're taught by people who sometimes they have nowhere else to go, but sometimes they are just dedicated teachers who believe. But they get tired, too, and they need to be able to go to Publix or Winn-Dixie, and they need to be able to buy groceries. And many of them are buying supplies out of their pockets because the educational budget has been stripped. And so it's a trickle-down effect. So as a city commissioner, what I would want to do is to – I'm getting feedback.
Okay, yeah, but we can – there we go. We got that down.
As a city commissioner, I would want to take a look, do an analysis of what we have. There is no silver bullet. I can't sit here and say, yes, day one, I'm going to do this, and day one, I'm going to do that. I can't do that and be truthful. So we've got to look at what our current situation is and then what we want our situation to be and figure out ways and strategies to get there. All of the things we want to do or may need to do may not cost money. It may be a streamlining. It may be reaching out to other partners who can help us reach those goals. And I agree with her as well that we have a crime issue, okay? But that's not who we are. Tallahassee is a very positive and progressive city, and we need to keep focused on that and work on our problems and our challenges as they come and keep moving forward.
Okay, well, in the few moments we have here before we take a break and then just continue for a few more moments on Facebook Live, with all these situations, Diane, whether it's crime or job creation mm-hmm. or mentorship programs or mm-hmm. any of these kinds of things, you indicated that maybe we can find efficiencies within the existing system. You don't necessarily have to raise taxes or utility rates in order to pay for this?
Well, it depends. Again, if it's redistributing the taxes that we currently have, then maybe not. But I am not saying that I can sit here and tell you off the top of my head that no, we won't need to do this and no, we won't need to do that. I think we need to be honest with ourselves. We need to be very careful about what we're putting out there because people are listening to what we're saying and will hold us accountable because I want to be held accountable. But I don't want to be held accountable to something that's beyond my control. And so what I'm simply saying is that we need to look at what we currently have, what's the vision, what's the plan for moving forward, what is the strategic plan, where are we trying to be in 2035, where are we trying to be in 2020, which is a short time away, and let's figure out how to get there, and let's think out of the box. Let's not always go straight to raising taxes. Let's go to looking at other efficiencies, and then if we are not able to make it happen, then we can say we would be able to do this by this, but this is what it costs. Who's willing to help participate in the cost of getting us there?
Okay, and just a couple of minutes, Bob. Same deal. You can do this without going and saying, hey, folks, we got all these needs. We're going to have to raise your taxes or something.
Behold, Tom, this is the 2018 water quality report for the city of Tallahassee. Here's the 2017 water quality report. These are four-color, heavy stock. I've been in the public relations business. These cost a lot of money to create, a lot of man hours. Not only that, we mail them to every address in the city. And then we get the honor of being able to recycle them or landfill them. we could get – this is a web page. We could get rid of this and save God knows how. I would say it's easily six figures and it could be higher. I'm sure there are other examples of this. There are many things like this that we can eliminate. Nobody's going to miss a thing. We can replace it with a web page, and that money can be dedicated to other things. So I think having three new commissioners come in, I think just having that fresh blood, having fresh set of eyes, we'll be able to identify things that efficiencies, whatever, things like this that will provide us that we can use those resources, rededicate them to better uses.
A few more topics we're going to cover here in our ongoing discussion of Tallahassee City Commission things involving two of the candidates for the seat 5 position here on Political Perspectives. We'll do that on Facebook Live momentarily. Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today, courtesy of Evan Rossi and Lydell Rawls, handling the interconnections, providing video support for 4FSU are Houston Brannon, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, and Diane Harper for Facebook Live and WFSU.org. Trisha Moynihan is pushing all those buttons back there, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Tomorrow we'll set politics aside, and Mark, we can't say celebrate the one-week anniversary of Hurricane Michael's departure from our fair town. Our WFSU news team will have some updates for us, but we most especially want to know what was the worst thing you experienced in the course of that storm, but also what was the most inspirational or most positive experience you had. We'll talk about it all right here on Perspectives tomorrow.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to our special extended bonus conversation here on Political Perspectives with the candidates for Tallahassee Commission, Seat 5, Bob Lutain and Diane Williams-Cox. And our Facebook Live fans are here with us, and we thank you for hanging in with us here. Let's go backwards this way here. This has been a big problem at City Hall since, I guess, time immemorial. You remember all the should the then mayor have recused himself from that decision? Are the commissioners really kind of snotty towards citizens to be heard? All of this, and suddenly you have the FBI investigation and all these allegations and unsubstantiated reports in many instances. But there is a crisis, perhaps, at Tallahassee City Hall when it comes to public confidence. For sure. Mm-hmm. We don't know about the other stuff yet. But Diane Williams-Cox, how do you change that around where people go, yes, I now trust my elected and appointed officials at City Hall again?
I think we as commissioners or future commissioners need to go to the people. We need to take City Hall, the City Hall commission meetings into the community so that the people feel close to what who we would be and what we're doing. And I think many times folks are relying on sound bites or relying on what they see on the news and not able to make the meetings. And some, and for those who can tune in and look at it, they can do that. But I think that it's going to be real important for us to bring government to the people up close and personal so that they can feel as though they can touch it. Make sure that we can hear. I am pleased that the last time I was at City Hall for the commission meeting, the room has been rearranged. Because one of the times when I was there, the podium had been moved to a place far away from the dais. But I was happy to see that things have been modernized and things look really, really nice in there now. So I'm hoping that if citizens come, they'll feel more comfortable. But it requires parking downtown, which is a nightmare sometimes, climbing up the hill if you go to Claman Plaza, and then getting inside, going through security and actually having to tell people where you're going. So we need to make government more accessible so people won't think you're hiding something because you're having to go through so much to get there.
All right. Bob, do you have any ideas on that? How do you restore that confidence and that at least comfort level with city? Of course, I'm old school. I remember when you used to be able – and I would do this all the time in covering City Hall. I would just go up to the mayor's office or the commissioner's offices. I'd hang out with the secretaries and say, oh, is Commissioner so-and-so? And they say, oh, no, he went to Chicago. Well, why did he go to Chicago? And the little notepad comes out, and you'd get all this information. Mm-hmm. You had free access to everything. It's not like that now.
Yeah, I think Diane makes a good point about accessibility. I think we have to make government more accessible to people. I personally, if I were to win, I live about a mile from TMH. It's much easier to get to my house than it is to get downtown and have parking. And by the way, the coffee's better. I'm just going to have office hours at my house. For, you know, if people want to come downtown, great. They can meet me downtown. But if you want to come by my house, you know, it's you can meet me at my desk and we can talk about things there. But we do. I mean, this is not a mystery. In 2014, voters passed a ethics reform package, a referendum that clearly said they wanted tougher ethics ordinances and a panel with the power to do it. For whatever reason, I don't want to point fingers. A lot of people are leaving government, but it has not been done. I think all the candidates seem to agree this has got to be job one. We've got to get an ethics ordinance that has some teeth to it, and we've got to give the ethics panel the ability to enforce it. A lot of the hang-up has been over if somebody violates the ethics thing, were they criminally or corruptly intending to do it, or was it simple intent? And I think it just needs to be simple intent. If they can prove you intended to do it, then an investigation should ensue. The other things I would like to see happen is to make government more accessible. I've been running for over a year now. Most people, we've been on the campaign trail. To run citywide is very difficult. It takes a lot of time to mount any type of a campaign, and it's expensive. You have to rely on contributions or on your own money or whatever. It's very expensive. I would like to see it to where we make some of the districts single member districts like the county does. So we have smaller districts. If some guy or woman wants to run for office and burn out a few pairs of shoes and knock on a lot of doors, if they have smaller districts, they're able to do that, and they don't have to have a lot of money to run for office, and more people can get involved. It brings government, and people can be with their constituents a lot more when we do that. So that's one thing. I think we could go back to the rotating mayor thing. I think the mayor's office, it's provided some problems over the years. Once again, not pointing fingers, but I think I'd like to see us go back to the rotating mayor format. We would certainly save some money because there's a lot of staff there that could be deployed in other areas. And I think we should debate possible term limits. 8 years. Take a break. If you want to come back after a couple of years, fine. But maybe 8 years, and then let somebody else have a chance. Some of these things, I think would, in addition to finally giving the voters what they asked for, would do a lot to restore confidence in what's going on down at City Hall.
Full financial disclosure too, like some other.
Yeah, and that's not the silver bullet. We talked about that at a forum last night. But I know that when I filled out my financial disclosure, I was pretty shocked at what I didn't have to report, and I did report it anyways. But what I didn't have to report, I think it was anything less than $10,000. That's a lot of money, So I think we could do a lot more with financial disclosure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw you shaking your head. Yes, Diane.
Well, yeah, absolutely. When as a member of the Planning Commission, I had to complete this financial disclosure. When I worked for the Florida Legislature, I had to provide financial disclosure. I think whatever we can do to open ourselves up for transparency will also provide the public's trust. But I think the other thing too is when I move about this community, I don't meet strangers. I talk to anybody, and that's how you get to know and learn who people are. And it's just amazing to me that how people just open up because they really want someone to listen to them. And I have a listening ear. And I'm happy to listen to them, and I'm happy to have conversations with them. We're working on an event right now, and we're hoping to take place on Monday, to have some community conversations with individuals so they can feel comfortable coming up to you saying, hey, I don't like this or I don't like that. This is what I recommend. This is what I suggest. There are a lot of great ideas out there, but sometimes people are not going to tell you because you didn't ask. So let's ask. And let's find out what the next great thing is sitting out there.
Well, before we close it off and give both of you a chance to say essentially whatever you want here in our closing moments, this bugaboo about the CRA, which the city is going to continue participating in, mm-hmm. in both aspects. County has backed out of the downtown part of that anyway, but you still have the South Side and the Frenchtown CRA, as well as downtown for City of Tallahassee. So how do you or maybe you don't want to keep that going, but how do you use that in perhaps a more transparent way because of part of the that ongoing confidence crisis that we have is, oh my gosh, all that money, it's out there and developers are coming in and there's the potential for corruption and all that. How do you deal with that?
Well, let me just say that the question that I asked early on was, how do you create a CRA district in the middle of one? And that's kind of what happened, as I see it. The Southside Frenchtown CRA, the Greater Frenchtown Southside CRA, has been in existence for about 17, 18 years, and then a new CRA was created. And geographically, it doesn't look like those two should have gone together anyway, but since they were put together, how do you go in the middle of those geographically and create another CRA district? It was kind of confusing to me. But then to pay more attention to the downtown than to the one that's been on the books the longest was also very interesting. I am happy that now that we're now focusing on Greater Frenchtown Southside CRA so that we can actually get some things done and to get some relief to the residents of both of those communities. But we also got to be smart about it. We've got to make sure that I've heard that proposals were not coming in. We need to know what is actually going into that office and what is not coming out. As a city commissioner, what I would want to see is all proposals. And let me know so that when I'm approached by residents and they say, well, hey, I submitted a proposal and it was denied or it was rejected, I will be able to understand what happened there and be able to clearly explain. I think that people really just need a good understanding of what happens and what's the process and how does it happen. So I am pleased that all eyes are on the Greater Frenchtown Southside CRA. Let's get it done.
Okay. Bob Lotain.
Yeah, if you read Chapter 163, which is a state statute overseeing CRAs, it clearly says that these are aimed at areas with blight, bad things, you know, poverty, et cetera. The downtown CRA, that there's nowhere downtown that really exists anymore. So I think the downtown CRA has pretty much outlived its usefulness. I wouldn't necessarily get rid of it because 10 years from now, that could change. We could put that in mothballs and just keep it because if we get rid of it, we're never getting it back. Okay, but whether we get rid of it or put it in mothballs, I think that we've seen enough with that and we've run into a lot of problems. The Frenchtown Southside CRA, not lot to be done there. Say what you want about all the construction, the student housing that's gone along with on Gaines Street, and nothing has gone south of that. Which, you know, that's where the South Side really is. It has led to a lot of revenue building up inside the CRA, the South Side. I think we're at $4 million now. There's some money in there that can be spent, and I think people have been patient waiting for it to be done. We talked about lighting up some of the crime hotspots. I went to a religious service in Frenchtown a couple months back, and I just had to go. You know, I'm in a wheelchair. In my neighborhood, my wheelchair can get down sidewalks, no problem. I thought I was taking my life in my hands. There is a lot of work to be done in these neighborhoods. There's a lot of bad areas. We've got the money there. They've been patient. It's time to spend some of that money to make those communities a better place to live.
Folks, you've been very gracious with your time today and very insightful about a lot of the issues facing us here. So I'll give you a couple minutes to wrap up. Bob Lotain, anything you want to say?
One of my passions, I was talking a little bit before, is the Red Cross. I've worked with the Red Cross for 12 years. We don't work just when there's hurricanes. We work year round on projects, events, funding initiatives to try to have the money there. So when these things happen that we've seen in the last week, the money is there to at least start things. Then people start. So I would just implore everybody, pick a charity, but I think the Red Cross is probably one of the better ones. We have a lot of people that are hurting. We need some help out there. Please, if you can, donate anything. try to help out. A lot of people need our help.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Diane Williams-Cox, the floor is yours, ma'am.
All right. Well, thank you. I want to say thank you to the residents, and thank you for showing up at the polls on August 28th and giving me approximately 49% of the vote. I'm asking that you will return on November 6th and let's finish what we started so that we can really get down to the nuts and bolts of moving our city forward. I'm your candidate for City Commission Seat 5. I received power a couple of days ago. I hope that everyone out there understand when I was coming in, I saw that there's still about 1,000 people out there who don't have power. Hang in there. Help is on the way. And if there's anything I can do, reach out to me on Facebook or if you have my number, text me. We've been working behind the scenes with others to try to get things moving. I'm a native of Quincy, Florida, and my heart is just overwhelmed with the great need that I see. And so I'm here to help not only in Tallahassee, but also in Gadsden County to do whatever we can, because we are sister counties, we're sister cities, and we're all going to thrive and rise together. So I'm here for it. Anything I can do to assist, I appreciate it. But remember, please go to the polls on November 6th. And if you don't think you can make it to the polls, voting is already underway for vote by mail. Early voting begins on Monday, October 22nd, and ends on November 4th.
Diane Williams-Cox and Bob Lotan, thank you all for coming in on Political Perspectives. And to our Facebook Live audience, thank you, folks, and we'll catch you tomorrow right here on WFSU Public Media.